Good evening and welcome to this special Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report. On today's show, we'll hear Bernie Sanders delegates from Idaho speaking at the 1912 Center in Moscow Tuesday, August 9th. Speakers on today's show will be Sanders National Delegate Nick Towsley of Lewiston and National Delegate George Skandalos of Moscow.
I'm going to say two things. The first thing I want to say is that nobody has said it yet, and that is that Bernie Sanders won the primaries. The primaries have been stolen from him, okay? So we just have to admit that. That's one thing. Another thing is, I know David disagrees with me, but it has been stolen from him. That's fine. Okay. The question is that when Bernie Sanders delegates walked out, and you know, a lot of people were watching it on Facebook because a lot of people were live streaming it, so people did know about it. The question is that I think tactically it would have been better to stay in, because what happened is that when you guys walked out, you walked out into, and correct me if I'm wrong because I only saw it on, you know, different Facebook channels. You stayed in the press room, the press tent, right? And you were being questioned by the media. Well, the media did not relay the truth, right? So had you stayed on the floor, because on the floor it was live on television, you know, on the network, and create a rebellion right there on the floor, I think it would have been more, you know, actually more people would have seen it. Because what I think happened is that those...
So that's the longest question I've ever heard in my whole life. So basically what you're trying to say is those people were in the media tent, but that was not quite true. Yes, there was a bunch of people in the media tent, but outside the media tent, there were also a bunch of people. And I've got video and testimony.
Yeah, but
that,
it was not shown on the major media. That's the point. You want to get on the major media people who are outside of the circle see it.
It was a peaceful demonstration, and it ended gracefully. And the police were wonderful there.
Go ahead. Let me address this, Lita, because I think what you're asking was, what was the point of the demonstration? The point of the demonstration, the reason that the people that walked out, keep in mind, the way this works is we get there. There's events till 12:30 at night. We get to our hotels at around 2 in the morning, and then we have breakfast at 7 a.m. and start the day all over again. So we're getting an average of 4 to 5 hours of sleep. So we're all exhausted, first of all. So a lot of, you know, and this is kind of to give you a little bit of insight to what was happening there. We felt that our voices were silenced. And so the reason that a lot of the delegates for Bernie Sanders walked out and occupied the media tent was that the media wasn't covering our dissent. And so the way to get them to cover a dissent was for us to go and occupy the media tent, 200, 300 people sit down in the media tent and say, we're here, we're not happy, it's not unity as you see it here, this is what we're choosing to do. Now, whether or not that was the best strategic thing in hindsight, maybe not. But you know what we did afterwards, after we all walked out in protest, we walked back in and we took back our seats. And the reason we walked back and took back our seats is because most of us, not everybody, some delegates took their credentials, ripped them up, and walked away and said, fuck the DNC, I'm done. Right? Some did. I'll be honest with you. But most of us walked back in and said, it's my party too. I have a seat at the table. We're the 46%. And we're gonna take, and this is why we're back in our seats. Because we want our voices heard. Because the moment you rip up your credential and you say, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not whatever, your voice ceases to matter. Because if you're not a Democrat, which is fine, you don't have to be a Democrat. I've always been an independent. You don't have to be a Democrat. But the moment you say, I'm not a Democrat, you don't have a seat at the table. And that's fine. You don't have to have a seat at that table. Nobody's forcing anybody. And part of this meeting was to gather a lot of the progressives and give you a chance to hear different viewpoints. You know, like I told you, myself, I'm probably going to write in Jill Stein. Bill's going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But you know what all of us will do? And I guarantee you, every single one of the Bernie Sanders delegates from Idaho will do. We're going to work our asses off to elect Democrats from Idaho to every local office. Every single one of us. Now, there is lists up at the front. If we could please start passing those around, and if you could please sign up, you might get lucky enough and you might pair up with me to go canvass.
Can we pass that questionnaire around to some of the other people who wanted questions?
Yeah, sure.
And I don't want to speak for everybody. Guys, I want to give you a little bit of insight on some of the intimidation that happened. I'll tell you some of... Oh, go ahead. Yeah, okay, sorry, Pete.
I know George has a lot to say. I had a preview with him about 2 days ago. So I have a question about, in part, the superdelegates. John is kind of my conscience, and he thought I might have hurt Pete's feelings by booing him, and I know that Pete is not the least bit sensitive, so I wasn't worried about it. But... I love Pete with a deep purple passion, but I hate superdelegates with the same deep purple passion. The concept of the superdelegates reminds me of the 17th Amendment to the Constitution, without which we would still have legislators electing our people who go back and represent us in Washington, D.C. in the Senate. And I see it as just a great big streak of elitism that has absolutely no place in our process for electing the nominee for the Democrats. But with that in mind, and also what went on in the DNC with trying to organize it so that Hillary would win, again, something that absolutely has no place in our system, it's been suggested to me that that's just good old hardball politics. And we know that back in the old days, people like Lyndon Johnson used to grab people by the lapels and tell them what they, by gosh, were going to do. The thing I'm wondering is, I know that with the Sanders campaign, there was a lot of sentiment against the superdelegates, and we've had them since, what, 1972? And all of a sudden, it's hit us between the eyes, and we realize that it's a terrible idea, and possibly things that have gone in the DNC have been things that would have upset us over the years if we knew about them. But do you think it's possibly because Senator Sanders brought so many new people in that aren't used to business as usual and were offended by it, that we might have a chance to actually work collectively to change that aspect of our system?
Yeah, I have a feeling about the superdelegates. I think that there is a place for superdelegates because I don't think a senator, a sitting senator, a governor, or a representative should have to campaign. But I think the superdelegates should be very limited, and they should be pledged to whatever the vote is by the primary or the other, or the caucus. In other words, we have superdelegates because we don't want them to have to run, but we pledge them in the proportion that the rest of us vote.
Well, that's another opinion. Thank you.
Another question? Yes, right here. Your name?
Anthony. I'm from Pullman, Washington, and member of the Green Party in Washington State. Just had a quick question for everybody. I know there's a lot of, I'm appreciative of what the Bernie Sanders movement did, and that's all, why we're all here tonight, but I was wondering, you know, if we wanted to get money out of politics and to address the, you know, the situation of a two-party duopoly, would people be willing to come into a party that doesn't accept corporate donations, a clean money campaign, you know, clean money party? Is that something that, if there was a wave of that, could we work with that? Because I guess I divorced the Democratic Party a while ago, so I'm just wondering how you guys feel about taking the momentum and shifting it towards the Green Party.
Well, my feeling on this is that if we have Donald Trump, we could have five more Scalias in the next 8 years, and think what that would mean for our democracy. Think what that would mean. That would be things like Citizens United on steroids and so forth. So I'm very much afraid of that, and I would do anything to get that, and I don't see Hillary as such a bad choice. I think the Democratic Party is being changed. We realize what happened with the DNC, but you have to realize that the top three people were fired. Oh, they were allowed to resign the Monday after, but they were fired. So perhaps we're not going to have that problem again. When the former governor, Ed Randell, was the DNC chairman, and he had given $1,000 to Al Gore, he turned right around and gave $1,000 to Bill Bradley because he thought the DNC should be above the partisanship on that.
And here's the problem I've had with a third party deal. If any candidate doesn't get the 270 electoral votes to win the presidency, then the choice goes to the House of Representatives. So I'm not sure what mechanism or how would we have a three-party system with those kinds of rules in place, and what kind of changes would have to be made to the electoral system in order to do that. That's my fear now. I'm Green Party. I'm starting to see the color there. So I'm wondering what changes would have to be necessary in the Electoral College in order to eliminate this 270 vote thing. And that's what sort of worries me a little bit about Bernie supporters going to the Green Party at this point in this election cycle. That may throw that whole ball game, and they could elect a dog catcher from Washington, D.C. to be the president, and then the Senate would do the same. Another question? Back here.
You're listening to Bernie Sanders delegates from Idaho speaking at the 1912 Center in Moscow, Tuesday, August 9th. Some of the voices on this recording are Sanders National Delegate Nick Tousley of Lewiston, Idaho Superdelegate and Nez Perce County Democratic Chair Bob Gortenson, National Delegate George Skandalos of Moscow, National Delegate Bill Parks of Moscow, and Idaho State Convention Delegates Chris Norton and Bob Johnson, both of Moscow. All were pledged to Bernie Sanders on the first ballot of their respective conventions.
Hello, this is Mary McHugh with an important news update from Radio Free Moscow. If you haven't already heard, you need to know that KRFP, your listener-supported community radio, is going full power to 1100. Broadcasting at 1100 watts from Paradise Ridge will bring the voices of progressive radio to even more citizens in the Palouse region, including the Pullman area and outlying rural communities in Latah and Whitman counties. We have an FCC permit to complete this upgrade by August 2017, and we need your support to make this happen. KRFP needs your help to meet our goal of raising $48,000 in addition to our usual annual operating expenses. Please make your contribution today to Radio Free Moscow's 1100 watt project. I am asking you to adopt a watt at $44 per watt. Adopt 1 watt, 10, or 100 watts. Donate what you can. Every dollar counts. You can donate securely online at krfp.org or mail a check to 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Please indicate on your check that you are donating to the Full Power Project. We thank you for your support. It ensures that progressive media is heard loud and strong in our community for many decades to come.
I just wanted to address one more thing, actually, that Bill didn't cover. The other thing that's scary about a Trump presidency, and I know that they did this at the DNC a lot, which was a little insulting to try to to fear-monger all of us into getting behind Hillary Clinton. But one issue that hasn't been addressed is about a Trump presidency, and that scares me particularly in a place like Idaho, where we've had white supremacist issues, is that if you get a demagogue like Trump who espouses misogyny and fear of others, and he wins, what we haven't thought about is that that will embolden lots of politicians. Because you know what politicians love to do? They love to use a winning strategy. And that will embolden a generation of politicians or the next electoral cycle in 2018. Can you imagine the South? Can you imagine Northern Idaho? All those politicians coming out against Mexicans, Muslims, blacks, women, and using that same rhetoric when they saw that that man won the presidency? That is a scary thought. Now, as far as you saying with the Green Party, I totally think that Jill Stein should have a seat at the table. I think most delegates like Jill Stein. But, you know, we will have redistricting in 2020 in Idaho. There's a plan for 2018 and 2020 where hopefully, and I'll tell you, our local Idaho legislators are working their tails off to try to get reelected and increase our numbers so that they don't gerrymander Idaho like they've been doing. And the problem with Idaho, because it's like 98% white, it's in the other states, they can use racism to strike down the gerrymandering. In Idaho, you can't do that. So every vote in Idaho by a Democrat counts for 0.8%. Every vote by a Republican counts for 1.2%. So the odds are terribly stacked against us. And those are the things that we do have to consider when we think about a third-party alternative.
Thank you, George. We have questions stacking up here. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Marshall. I'm trying to figure out how to best put this plug in because I'm a community organizer now, and I'm shameless, and I'll ask for anything.
Stand up, Marshall.
I'm wondering if anybody else in the room agrees with me that probably the most dangerous federal representative in Idaho that we have is Raul Labrador. I am the current field organizer for the James Piotrowski campaign. I'm also James Piotrowski's son. I've never been afraid to tell my dad off, and I would not be working for him if I didn't believe in the cause. But I have been putting in about 50 hours a week for a pretty crappy salary all summer for this now. Like I said, pretty crappy. Sometimes. So I am trying to figure out how we mobilize the Bernie Sanders supporters. I am a very strong Bernie Sanders supporter. I watched him announce his candidacy last summer. I've been excited about it the whole way. I caucused for him in Boise. And so far, I have had 5 people volunteer for this campaign, which is pretty depressing, considering that I saw thousands of progressives turn out in Boise. So I'm trying to figure out how we mobilize this progressive movement, how we get progressives in the state to understand that if a candidate isn't running the most progressive campaign they've seen, how do you get progressives to still get behind them and realize that this is Idaho that we're in and that people aren't going to get elected if they run a Bernie Sanders level progressive campaign. At this point in Idaho, obviously politics are, it's shifting here in the state, but I've been having a lot of trouble with people saying, I try to get people to volunteer with us, and they say, I don't know exactly what they say, but they're not satisfied with the level of progressiveness that these campaigns are running, and I try to explain to them, realistically, if we want to get these people who are progressives elected, we can't run this level of progressive campaign in Idaho. And I'm trying to figure out how to get people mobilized. So if anybody has any ideas of how to mobilize the progressives in the state to volunteer, obviously everybody has one vote, but if you come and phone bank, you know, maybe you can get, you can be worth 10 votes for that 2 hours that you worked, and now you're worth 11 times as much as anybody else in the room. So,
okay. So your question is, how many people in this room want to help you work for James Piotrowski? That's his plug. Do we have anybody who would like to raise their hand? Help this guy out. He's got five people. We got two back here. We got from this area here. Okay. Okay. Well, we're just trying to get you some help. So please get with Marshall. Okay. Good enough. Next. Okay.
I think this points up the problem and the discouragement that people felt in the state convention. This is the reason why they didn't want those very progressive things in the state platform. Because today this man has to run, and he has to run on a platform which can appeal to people who are moderate Republicans. And if you put something in that will make the most leftward of us, and I'm there, if you put it in, you're just killing his chance of winning this next election. It's a tough uphill road, at any rate, but don't make it harder on him by taking extreme positions.
May I say something about that? Go ahead. Grab the mic.
That's okay, I don't
need a mic.
Yeah, you do.
What'd you say?
I understand what you're saying, Bill, but I think that if you really are progressive, you've got to run a progressive campaign. You've got to be true to you, who you are. That's what excites people. That's what excited the Bernie people. If you make the same mistake every single time where you're afraid to run a progressive campaign, and progressive is not radical. Progressive, most of the people in Idaho want to have gun control background checks. Most of them do. Why aren't our progressive leaders supporting that publicly? Because why? When most of the people want it.
Yeah, just a minute.
So I'm if you want progressive enthusiasm in a campaign, you've got to give them progressive reasons to do it.
Okay, but
take a chance, take a risk.
One of the things on the state platform, which was so contentious, was that they wanted to legalize all drugs without exceptions. That is not a winning ticket in Idaho. And those are the things that I'm talking about. And therefore, I stand by my same thing and ask the gentleman here who is probably at the thing and is now trying to get his father elected. And this is George, and he has much better things to say.
I was going to address what Frank said. So usually when people are campaigning, they tell them that you knock on the door, you spend 2 minutes at the door, right, if you're the candidate or if you're campaigning on behalf of the candidate. You knock on the door, spend 2 minutes, and move on, and hopefully they like your smile, they like your leaflet, and maybe they'll vote for you. In order to change the hearts and minds of people, you need to have meaningful conversations that last half an hour or more. These are the conversations that have study after study prove that this is how you change people's minds. Now, if all of us in this room, for example, went out and we committed to one day a week, go out, say that James Piotrowski decided that he was going to be super progressive, and he got every single person in this room and the equivalent of every single person in this room in every congressional district in Idaho and every legislative district to go out and say, I'm going to commit to having four conversations. There's 50 of us in this room. If 50 of us went out and we talked to, we had four half-hour conversations a week, right? 2 hours, four half-hour conversations. That's 200 people. If we did that for the next 10 weeks, that's 20,000 homes we're going to hit. That's a substantial amount. You can win elections that way. But the problem is we don't go out and do that. And Frank, I agree with you because I think like 78% of us are really progressive. But this is what happened, and the IDP has the statistics on this. You know what happened? Why the Democrats got really mad? Of all the people that voted for Barack Obama in 2008, less than 10% voted down ballot. Think about that. The most loved Democrat in recent memory in Idaho that won by a landslide everywhere in the country, and they marked his name and left the booth. They didn't vote for any of the progressive Democrats, and we actually lost seats that year. And that's what the Democrats are up against. And that's what we progressives, and I hate to say it, but even a moderate Democrat would have probably passed the stop the gap, the close the gap legislation that Dan Schmidt fought hard for. And all those kinds of things that time and time again. So I'm addressing your question, but how many of us have done the meaningful conversations? Some of us have, but not enough of us to make that tidal wave that we need to change it.
You're listening to Bernie Sanders delegates from Idaho speaking at the 1912 Center in Moscow, Tuesday, August 9th. Some of the voices on this recording are Sanders National Delegate Nick Tousley of Lewiston, Idaho Superdelegate and Nez Perce County Democratic Chair Bob Gortenson, National Delegate George Skandalos of Moscow, National Delegate Bill Parks of Moscow, and Idaho State Convention Delegates Chris Norton and Bob Johnson, both of Moscow. All were pledged to Bernie Sanders on the first ballot of their respective conventions.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
I don't have the microphone. This gentleman who's been waiting has it.
My introduction to local politics about 6 years ago happened when Shirley Brigo came to my house, and she sat down and we talked for about an hour on our porch, and I learned about what her real progressive values were,
right,
and how she votes, and that's why I support her. And I think that you would get that kind of support if the Democrats were not so timid about really taking, they don't have to take super progressive values, but just really not be so afraid about stating what you really believe in.
Frank.
That you're going to, who are you going to scare? The people who are not going to vote for you.
But we're in Latah County. I could smoke a joint and have this meeting, and, you know, if I was running for office, I could get elected. I mean, that's Latah County, right? Like, we live in a bubble in Idaho. We do have that, unfortunately. That's the problem. That's what I'm saying. That's why, like, Shirley Ringo is talking. Ask Shirley to tell you what it was like when she ran for Congress up in Kootenai County. She'll tell you a very different story than the nice cup of tea that you guys had for a half an hour.
No, but I don't think that
No, right. I'm not saying you should change your story, but I'm saying, like, if we all fanned out, I think we have so much more in common with a working man in Idaho, but we have to go out and we have to have those meaningful conversations, even out there. You know, and if all of us progressives, that's what I meant earlier, Frank, when I was saying, in order for us to have a seat at the table, we need to be a formidable force. California, for example, if you're going to run as a Democrat in California, in a Democratic stronghold, people are falling over themselves to win that primary because they know that once they run as a Democrat, they're going to win, and everybody loves to win. And you know why? Because they have the organization, they have the money. In Idaho, they have the thankless job of, like, trying to figure out if they're going to run or not. But if we could say, hey, if you run as a Democrat, hey, baby, you got, like, 50 people that are going to go knock on doors for you every weekend. That changes the equation, and I think they could do that. But I don't know how James could do that and stand for something, unfortunately, unless he could get the grassroots behind him. And that's the conundrum. Hi, Ken.
I have three short topics. First is a question. Would you write a letter to The Economist magazine? Second is, would you watch some YouTube videos? And third, would you like to help progressives gain a little respect in Idaho? Not necessarily in the Godfather sense, but, you know, a little practical respect. In the latest issue of The Economist magazine, there is an article that talks about some people that are moving to North Idaho, and they name the cities Coeur d'Alene, Sandpoint, and Bonners Ferry. The people who are moving to North Idaho are characterized, shall we generously say, as escaping from legal notice of authorities around the country. And they're moving here because they've got this idea that, gee whiz, this is a good place to, quote, disappear, close quote. And they enjoy the idea of loose gun regulation, and they enjoy the idea of loose regulation generally, etc. My question is, given that The Economist magazine, which is worldwide in its distribution, and I just happen to have a copy locally, is running an article like this and mentioning by name North Idaho cities, would you be willing to write an article to the, write a letter to The Economist magazine suggesting that, you know, Bernie Sanders has done really well in the last few months in North Idaho, and perhaps your perception of North Idaho is not completely accurate.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report Special Friday Edition for tonight. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. That's KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a great weekend.